Hi, Merry Christmas.
So why does Christmas start in September in the Philippines, Val?
Well, because it's a burr month, you know, September, October, November, December. So it's like brrr.
And are there plenty of ho-ho-hos there with you, Andy?
No.
That wasn't the answer I was looking for. Hey, did you happen to see the doodle on Thursday?
Like on the Google Doodle?
The Google Doodle.
Oh.
For Independence Day in Vietnam?
Oh, actually, no. Is it still up?
Hello and welcome to the Bureau Podcast. I'm Matt Cowan, the Bureau Chief and your host. Thank you for joining me on Vietnam's award-winning podcast. And if you're listening in from the Philippines, Merry Christmas. Yes, that's right. Christmas gets underway each year on September 1. Now, if you're listening in from anywhere else, you may be exhaling a large sigh of relief that Christmas for you hasn't started yet, or not. Maybe you'd love to celebrate it for longer than the usual period of time. In any case, I hope you're enjoying your lockdown, if that's at all possible. Never mind, one person who might just be able to make it possible, at least for the next hour, is the Bureau's Alvin Size content manager from the Philippines, where there are plenty of ho-ho-hos at this time of year, Melanie Casul. How are you, Mel?
Hi! Merry Christmas.
So why does Christmas start in September in the Philippines, Val?
Well, because it's a burr month, you know, September, October, November, December. So it's like brrr. So at about this time this year, you know, the weather starts cooling down and, well,
okay.
I think mostly it's really like a device created by shopping malls, you know? So to get the shoppers in early, so they have the Christmas promotions and stuff starting.
I just thought it was some kind of social experiment.
No.
Well, at least you have an excuse not to pull down the decorations each year. I think there's still a Happy New Year 2020 sign up in District 4 that I drive past all the time. Does George Michael play over and over again in the malls too?
No, it's Mariah Carey mostly. And we have actually a local singer called Jose Marie Chan. And so he's like the Christmas guy.
Okay, nice. And waiting on the line from what might as well be the North Pole at the moment, in what is arguably the most isolated city in the world as we speak. Either way, he's isolated. Co-host Andrew Tran. How are you, Andy?
I'm well, thank you. Only a few days left till hard lockdown is lifted.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing, hopefully. Mm. And are there plenty of ho-ho-hos there with you, Andy?
No, not Christmas yet for me.
That wasn't the answer I was looking for. Hey, do you guys enjoy Christmas in Ho Chi Minh City? Do you usually travel anywhere or go back home or somewhere in Vietnam?
I keep it low-key, to be honest. Last year, I think I was celebrating with a few people. Thank God things are open here in Saigon. I think Australia is like a ghost country on that day as well.
Yeah, well, for me, it's not consistent. Like maybe one Christmas we go home back to Manila and then another Christmas we go somewhere else. So it really depends also on, you know, when the school calendar ends and begins. Like, is it going to be all through Tet as well? So, yeah, alternating between home and enjoying Christmas somewhere else.
A New Year's pretty special, New Year's Eve with the fireworks in Manila, although it's been curbed a little bit.
Well, you know, as a family, we've never really had fireworks in our home. But yeah, our neighbors, they do, but it has, the law has changed over time.
Hey guys, before we kick off the show, I want to wish all of our Vietnamese listeners a happy National Day weekend. Of course, Thursday, September 2 was Vietnam's National Day or Independence Day. And we're kind of celebrating a long weekend here as much as we can.
A long 10 weeks.
Yeah, it's pretty long, isn't it? And hey, did you happen to see the doodle on Thursday?
Like on the Google Doodle?
The Google Doodle.
Oh.
For Independence Day in Vietnam.
Oh, actually, no. Is it still up?
No, I don't think it is. I don't know who did it, but the grade fivers at the local primary school down the road did a good job.
But you know what? A couple of years ago, there was a Google Doodle competition for primary school kids.
Yeah, well, they were much better. this one looked as though Google Vietnam had furloughed their graphic designer and got the accountant to do it instead.
Or the accountant's kid.
Yeah. Well, no, kids actually do a great job on those Google Doodles, but this one, I don't know what happened. I don't know if you ever saw that Seinfeld episode, you gotta see the baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of that. I was excited to see it, but when I did, I couldn't stop looking at it because it was so ugly.
Yeah, it's like that movie, Austin Powers, remember?
Yeah.
The Molly Mole, the irony of the fact that the character is played a mole in the movie. Yeah. And oh my gosh, if anybody hasn't seen that, I think it's on Netflix right now, so you can check that out again.
All right, good tip. Anyway, before we get into the show today, which is a big one about travel and the future of travel in Vietnam with a special guest, I want to give you two a quick quiz about Vietnam's national holiday.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't really know the mechanics of this. So when you have the answer, just say it.
Okay. But actually, Andy's on delay. So I'll give you a few seconds before I answer.
Yeah. Okay. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yep.
All right.
Ready.
Okay. Number one, what does Vietnam's National Day recognize?
Oh.
Come on, guys. We just had it.
winning World War II?
No.
Oh, man. Wait.
Andy?
I'm on Google right now.
I don't know. It's not the fall
that's
going on, that's for sure.
No. Okay, so...
That was
bad. Oh, okay, okay, I'll give you the official answer. The Proclamation of Independence of the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, written by Ho Chi Minh and announced in public. His announcement led to the independence of Vietnam.
But that was in 1945.
That's
so
right,
it's also connected to World War II, right?
Yeah, it was at the end of the war. Yeah,
okay.
That's right.
So I'm kind of half there.
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, then. That obviously went well. Question two. Ho Chi Minh went by a number of names in his time.
Mm.
In fact, Ho Chi Minh wasn't his birth name. It was Nguyen Xuân Gung. Give me at least one other name he went by.
Uncle Ho.
Okay, I'll take that. That's a bit of a nickname though.
Yeah.
But are there any others that you know of? Andy's kind of silent at the end there.
Bak Ho.
Yeah, Bak Ho is one. Which is Uncle Ho,
yeah.
Which translates to Uncle Ho. Okay, the other two were Nguyen That Thanh and Nguyen Ai Quoc.
And he used that when he was writing stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he kept his anonymity that way as well. Yeah. And interestingly, Nguyen Ai Quoc, it means sort of love of country my country.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. It's quite Chinese in origin, I think, Andy.
Hey, you know, it's controversial, but, you know, a lot of people came from China.
Okay, so number three, this quiz is just amazing, isn't it? Okay, question number three. Of course, Ho Chi Minh is the official name of the city where we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from Saigon, what other names has Ho Chi Minh City been known as?
Oh, man. In terms of like Saigon, like letter C, C-O-N.
No.
Yes.
Man, if this was a test for citizenship, I would just die straight away.
Okay, before Mel looks it up on Google.
It is here. See, Saigon.
Is it?
Oh. Yes. Saigon comes from Saigon, and the letter O has a hat. Saigon.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay, all right, I might give you a point for that. But the other ones are Prey Nukor. Apologies to Khmer speakers, but that's from the Khmer period. And then during the Vietnamese rule after that, it was called Yarden.
Ah.
Which you probably know and you've probably seen it around town.
The Khmer name is from a plant.
Yeah, that's right. It's allegedly after the kind of tree that you commonly see around Saigon.
That's very similar to how cities are named in the Philippines, actually. A lot of the original city names is the flora and fauna that was seen in that area.
Yeah, well, that's it for Ho Chi Minh City or Saigon. And then, of course, when the French were here, they named it Saigon. Mm-hmm. And Andy, you'll be interested in this. The Sai part of Saigon is Sino-Vietnamese. And it means firewood or twigs.
Mm.
And also the Gon part, it's Sino-Vietnamese. It's said to mean stick or pole.
So I wonder if these trees, like these sticks, they're these firewood trees and the Khmer plant, I wonder if they're still here now.
Yeah, they are. You can see them all around the city. They've got a broad base. They're kind of grey, silver on the trunk. And then they have a certain flower at, I guess, sort of the spring leading into the summer.
But here, not the yellow flowers of Tet.
I don't think they are. They're they're a white kind of fluffy thing. Yeah, they're all
around. We should go around one of these days.
Yeah, next time you sort of drive past one of those parks that are along the streets, check out the trees. That'll be them. And that's what Saigon is allegedly named after. And just one interesting little fact. There's a stick or a pole that street vendors, you know, that you see the ladies walking around, they have a stick across their shoulders and two baskets hanging off it.
Yeah.
That's called a gun. I hope I've got my tone right.
Mm.
Gun.
How do you spell that?
G-A-N-H.
Okay. Yeah. Saigon.
So, yeah, it might be that, you know, the name of Saigon comes from that as well.
Wow.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, let's move on. Question number four. In Ho Chi Minh City, what am I eating if I'm eating banh mi op la?
Oh, it's banh mi, bread with egg.
What kind of egg?
Omelette egg.
Okay, yeah, it's like it's an egg. It's a fried egg. And what's usually in it as well? What comes with it?
Mayonnaise.
Onion.
Yes.
Pate, if you ask for that. And then it has like little pickled, carrots. Am I right?
Yeah.
Well, not usually in a banh mi op la though. It's more simple.
Soy sauce.
Soy sauce and one more.
Chives, shallots.
Oh, you might get some of that. Yep, you might get some of that. Chili. Chili, of course. And the word op la, of course, is borrowed from the French.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Yeah, something like that. Okay, all right, moving on. Pardon my French. Question number five. Finally, where's the best banh mi in Ho Chi Minh City, in your opinion?
All
right.
You go first.
For me, there's two places. One, I will get chopped if I say the name because I don't know the real name of it. But the other one is just off the street in Kobat. And it's like near the border of D1 and D4. It's right next to the river.
Okay.
It used to be like a lot where backpackers were, but it's this bakery. And this bakery also makes banh mi. And so every morning when I was a traveler, I would be like, cool, I'm going to get banh mi op la. And I knew, and the reason why I ordered that was because they had no choice but to make the op la, like straight up. So you know you're going to get fresh bread.
Right.
Eggs can be fresh. So it's going to be perfect. But I don't know, can I say the other one? Otherwise, I might get in trouble.
No, maybe I should say it. I think I know what you mean. Is this the banh mi shop on Lettering?
I think so.
Yeah, so actually the official name of that is Banh Mi Huynh Hoa.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's owned by two women. Yep. Is this the one you're talking about as well?
Yes.
Yeah. And then the alternative name is
near the roundabout.
Yeah, it's like at the back of Zen Plaza.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, you and I are thinking about the same thing. So it's Banh Mi Huynh Hoa on Lettering.
Yeah.
And it's famous because it's owned by two women.
Yep. And there's always lines out the front.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's super good. It's super good.
Oh, they pack it with a lot of it's not the cheapest though. Like if anybody hasn't had it, it's not necessarily the cheapest.
Nah.
I mean, well, if you compare it to Albion, it's it's actually pretty cheap. Mm. Everything in Thalian is super cheap.
Yeah, it's money well spent. I love it. It's a good place.
Yeah. It's money well spent. Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Let's be friends.
But it's not just banh mi opla. You really want to get the one that's full of everything. Like the, how do you say it? The daidu. Daidu? That's like everything.
Oh, right. Oh, right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, guys. So as
did we pass our test?
No, you didn't. Okay. And I probably won't do that again.
Yeah.
As usual, at the top of the show, we take a look at some of the big news stories happening in Ho Chi Minh City and around Vietnam. And one of the biggest ones yet, just yesterday, in fact, was that District 7, a large district less than 10 kilometers south of the city center, has claimed they have COVID under control, according to VN Express.
Wow, yay! I'm happy to hear that. I mean, I'm all for good news. You know, I'm not going to challenge it. If VN Express says it, then it must come from, you know, a reputable source. So, yay!
That's Big D Energy over there.
What's that? What's Big D Energy?
It's four letters. It starts with a D and ends with a K.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Someone should make a skit that illustrates like a theoretical conversation between districts about like how D7 is able to overcome the COVID.
Yeah, I could just imagine District 1 and District 3, you know, are tag-teamed, and then District 2 and District 7, by virtue of a lot of foreigners living there, they're tag-teamed,
they just
you know, and just
they
like,
just don't get on, though.
No.
D2 and D7, you couldn't put them together.
No, oh, that's true, though.
Why is that the case?
Because a lot of the people that live in District 2 think that, you know, they are the center of the universe. And then they're they're always putting down the people that live in District 7.
And District 7's the best district.
Yeah, the roads are big. I mean, in District 2, you can't really walk on the pavement, you know. Here, you have like at least three big parks with a lake, man-made lake, that you can like jog and, you know, walk your dog and stuff like that.
Is it flood?
No.
Not much.
Not much, because there's a big swamp in the middle of Nguyen Van Linh, and that's where all the water goes to.
Well,
it's a big tick.
Yeah.
This announcement comes as caseloads continue to rise across the country. Over 482,000 cases have now been reported in this wave. It's probably up to about 500,000 as we speak, with the majority in Ho Chi Minh City, which has recorded over 230,000 cases as of yesterday, Friday, September 3. The seven-day daily new cases average over the past 3 months is now over 13,000 cases per day. How should we take the news about District 7 having the virus under control?
Tell us the secrets. Tell us the secrets. I'm representing D1. Tell us the secrets, man.
I really don't know. I honestly don't doom scroll anymore. You know, I leave it up to you to do it and tell me the highlights. So I'm blissfully ignorant about these facts and figures. I just can't take it if I doom scroll every day. So I'm just waiting for like, you know, papers on the bulletin board here in our, you know, in our elevator lift. And that's what I'm going to go by. And of course, emails, official emails from my employer. And I trust that.
Well, interestingly, the Prime Minister has again this week expressed the idea of having to live with the virus, that it can't be controlled completely, and that doing whatever it takes to end it isn't going to happen. He has also stated that we can't stay in lockdowns forever. Guys, what are your thoughts?
It's true. I don't think we can stay in lockdown forever, like from an economic point of view. And you see countries like Singapore, they're doing this through a careful kind of, if you're fully vaccinated, you can roam around. UK is doing it as well. Japan's doing it. I mean, yeah, cases are going up, but I think they'll treat it like the yearly flu, right?
Yeah.
You know, you just get a yearly back.
Or a booster shot.
Exactly.
I don't want to put down the seriousness of COVID, but when you look at the numbers and you look at how many accidental deaths has occurred with motorbike accidents, you know, in Vietnam, you know, since motorbikes started, you know, being used in the country, the numbers are like kind of up to par, right? I mean,
yeah,
I don't
usually up around 10,000 deaths a year, I think, on motorcycles.
So why isn't that highlighted? You know, why do we still see young children and infants riding on motorbikes without helmets?
Yeah, that's a good point, Mel. But that's probably a topic we should look at for another day. The Prime Minister's comments come after VN Express released the results of their survey on Thursday with a sample size of almost 70,000 respondents. I can't verify the survey instrument, so I think we should take the results with a grain of salt. But they do provide some interesting numbers and points for discussion. Of the 69,132 respondents, 62% said they'd lost their jobs because of COVID, with many of them for more than 6 months. Half of the unemployed respondents said they only had enough money to last for another month at most, with many depending on the financial support of family and friends. Also, nearly one in five of people still employed have had their salary cut in half.
Quite depressing. I feel like it's more than 62%.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's probably more like 70%.
Yeah, the numbers would be higher. And these respondents are just local people, right? Yeah, so
I'm assuming. I didn't see the details, but
So definitely, if you were a foreigner and you were in the similar situation, you would have either gone back to your country or, you know, still suffering like the 62%. Yeah.
Now, I've given you a lot of numbers and info here, but just let me share with you something which you may find surprising or not, and that is VN Express included a small bar graph to represent the sources of support for respondents. I'm not going to provide the percentages because I did the maths and they don't add up. So again, please don't take this as gospel, but I think it's relevant to look at. The major source of support for respondents has been family and friends, followed by none at all.
None. Okay.
No support from anyone.
Okay.
After that, neighbours and charities.
Okay.
Followed by former companies. Mm. And then finally, the government. And just on charities, well, in this case, not a charity, but someone who deserves a massive shout out is Robin Deepu and his staff at Bubba's Kitchen in Ho Chi Minh City.
Yeah.
Since this wave broke out, he and his staff have been feeding the city from hospitals to neighbourhoods to frontline workers. Just the other day, I saw that Robin and his team cooked 1,600 meals for those in need.
Delivered.
I've got to say, I know Robin, but I've had nothing to do with what he's been doing, but he's made me feel proud. It's extremely moving what this man has done and continues to do.
Wow. Robin's been here for, what, nearly 20 years, right?
I don't know how long. Yeah, a long time. A long time. And he stated that he won't stop till this lockdown ends.
Amazing.
So, listeners, when you finally get out of lockdown or you get the chance to visit Ho Chi Minh City someday, please, please, please support Bubba's Kitchen. If ever there was someone to support, it's Robin and his team.
Yeah, Robin in the hood.
Yeah, and also big shout out to Trevor Long from Saigon Motorcycles. I know he's been doing some great stuff. He's been posting that a lot. I hope he's recovering well there as well. Like, he was pretty serious like about a month ago. So, hope you're recovering well there, mate.
As I mentioned in the intro, today's show is a big one about travel. Now, it might seem a bit out of tune with the state Vietnam is in at the moment to talk about travel, but it's actually a very good time to talk about its future in Vietnam. Mm. Have you given it much thought, guys?
Yeah, of course. I mean, a big part of Vietnam's economy is in tourism. And so right now, when there's nothing going on, maybe now is the time for people who are in business in that industry should think about what they're going to do next.
Well, I decided we'd better ask someone who actually knows a little bit about travel. So this week I interviewed Dr. Nuno Ribeiro. Dr. Ribeiro is a senior lecturer at RMIT University Vietnam here in Ho Chi Minh City, where he lectures and leads research into tourism and hospitality in the School of Business and Management. Dr. Ribeiro has an undergraduate qualification in tourism planning and development and postgraduate degrees in tourism management from Penn State University in the US. I think we've got our man, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, really nice guy. Best looking guy in a three-piece suit.
And I get to see him every day at work.
But wait, there's more. Dr. Ribeiro has devoted his career to understanding how culture impacts travel behavior, Mel.
Wow. Yeah, that should be interesting. Let's hear it.
Dr. Ribeiro is also an expert on how knowledge can be used to better plan and develop tourism destinations, optimize international travel, and enhance the delivery of hospitality services. Well, I interviewed Dr. Ribeiro this week, and it's quite a lengthy interview, so we're not going to listen to the full interview today, but I'm going to make it available on the Bureau Asia YouTube channel in case anyone wants to listen to it, which I highly recommend you do. There are some amazing insights, and you can find the link in the show notes. Now, Mel and Andy, I've chosen highlights from the interview for us to listen to and react.
All right, bring it on.
Okay, the first highlight is his response to my question about the steps he thinks will likely be involved in opening Vietnam again to tourism. Dr. Nuno Ribeiro, thank you for joining the Bureau podcast.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. I've been a longtime fan of the podcast, so it's an absolute pleasure to be with you guys today.
That's great to hear. So let's get into some questions about the future of travel in Vietnam. My first question is, what will be the likely steps involved in opening back up to tourism?
The truth of the matter, Matt, is we don't know. We have been following very closely what our neighbors have been doing. Thailand, Singapore, Hong Kong. We don't know. One possibility that's been in the works for a while is to have so-called green zone, in which you can travel there if the entire population of the area is vaccinated, if you, the tourist, are vaccinated, if you show that there is proof that you have a negative test within a certain day. But that refers to international travel. What I think will happen first is that we will see an opening in domestic tourism, and that will happen piecemeal. You might see something happen in the city level where, okay, you can travel within city limits, then it might open to province level, but it will be very piecemeal, it will be very cautious and very tentative. I'm not sure if you saw in the news today that just this morning, Vietnam has issued an order to stop selling domestic flight tickets, which is an indication that we are being as cautious as we possibly can. But looking ahead, because I have no doubt whatsoever that tourism will rebound, and if history has taught us anything, and if previous tourism crises have taught us anything, is when it does rebound, it will be with a vengeance. I think you're likely to see first domestic tourism will open before international tourism. And that's a given. Number two, I very much doubt that you will be allowed to travel, as in for tourism purposes, without some sort of proof or evidence that you have been A, vaccinated, B, that you have had a negative COVID test, and C, a combination of the two. So you'll see an added emphasis on hygiene and security, and it's likely that we will experiment with certain areas. I don't think that the large city centers will be areas for experimentation just because it's so dangerous. The potential for another outbreak is too great. But we've been talking a lot about Phu Quoc. That might be a possibility. So islands are a little bit easier to control. So I think it will be tentative, and I think it will be very piecemeal with, I think, perhaps a certain degree of caution that we have not seen in previous tourism crises. In regard to having the so-called COVID passport or the vaccine passport, the complications on a bureaucratic level are high, as you can imagine, because who's going to issue, now I'm speaking in regard to international tourism, who's going to issue said passports? Are we going to rely on country-to-country agreements? So for example, say that a Thai tourist wants to visit Vietnam, will we have an agreement in place? Well, okay, we recognize what kind of vaccine passport or vaccine certificate you want to call it from the Thai government. They will recognize ours. Or is it going to be a supranational type of organization, such as the World Health Organization? Or are we going to leave it up to tourism transportation agencies, things like airlines and so forth? So we don't know. There's likely to be some bureaucratic discussions until we can agree on a model to follow.
So there you have it, Dr. Ribeiro on the possible steps that will be taken to get Vietnam tourism up and running again. Mel, let me ask you first on the question of opening up domestic tourism first, which will obviously happen. Mm-hmm. We've already been through that once or twice in Vietnam this past 18 months or so. So Tell us a little bit about your experiences and what you observed domestically once we were allowed to travel again last time.
Yeah. So when you say travel, it's mostly timed during holidays, right? National holidays, Tet. And unfortunately, this past September 2, it's a lockdown, so we didn't get to travel. So my thinking is that when there is an opportunity like this for domestic travel, people just jump into it. Especially, you know, families with kids that have been cooped up. And the first point of call would be the nearest, you know, the nearest quote unquote resort. So for us here in Ho Chi Minh City, that would probably be Vung Tau, right? And we've seen those photos from, you know, that last holiday
yeah,
we had.
Right. Yep.
And it was just like, you know, bumper to bumper, you know, shoulder to shoulder. And there was no social distancing whatsoever. So yeah, I think that when it comes to domestic travel, I don't think people in Ho Chi Minh City, unless they have relatives living in, you know, the outer provinces or in another major city elsewhere, I think it's just going to be within, you know, reach of a car, a day trip, you know, 2 hours on the road and that's it. I don't think it's going to go big.
Andy, Dr. Ribeiro says that travel domestically will be open gradually and cautiously. Piecemeal, I think, is what he said, and that it would also involve some experimentation. For example, no travel in city centres, perhaps. What might that mean for your neighbourhood and I suppose tourism in Ho Chi Minh City in general? Because most of the cultural sites are right in the city centre, right?
Yeah, you know, you got your churches, the rooftop bars, the restaurants, the gym activities. I think he's right. Like there will be a gradual rollback first. Like, you know, first we've got to get through, you know, what Directive 16. So we've got to get down to like hand deliveries, in dining, social distancing, and then kind of moving that along there. But then like once you have like mass gatherings that can be approved, I think he's right. Like you have to centralize a spot where people can have those kind of gatherings and control that. But I think if this whole lockdown has taught us something is that if you keep moving the goalposts, so to speak, which I think the authorities have done, and it's not necessarily done on purpose, but it's going to create like a simmering tension within the population. So I think if they have an approach is to kind of look at, you know, the long-term lead of it and start to mentally prep people, but also enable things to move a little bit quicker internally so that they're able to show positive signs of improvement and containment, and then we're able to kind of slowly and gradually move things along.
And what are, both of you, I'm going to ask you this question, your thoughts on Dr. Ribeiro's points about the bureaucratic nature or perhaps the paper pushing that will likely be involved and is so loved in this part of the world regarding the implementation of vaccine passports?
Yeah, we do love our stamps, don't we? Everything has to have a red stamp. For this insight, I would actually like to, you know, take on a positive note. All right. So I wouldn't use the word bureaucratic or red tape in a negative way. I would like to look at it from a positive way. And being in a type of government that we are in, I think that state-owned travel companies should take the lead on this one. And if they are the first ones to implement a proper, you know, step-by-step procedure, then the other companies, private-owned companies, will be able to follow suit. So for me, I'm looking at it from a positive point of view.
How do you deter people from getting fake forged vaccine passport documents? Mm. I mean, do you think that it might have to be some sort of special physical material coded on like some ID or passport that's issued by the government, like similar to the plastic polymer banknotes? Where we see, especially in Australia, but also here in Vietnam as well.
Well, I think there's been some mention about blockchain, right,
wow.
Andy? I think you know a little bit more about it than me, but the potential for blockchain technology to
assist in this.
Yeah, so you can have your vaccine passport online.
Mm.
It's online, but it's, I don't know the technology, Andy, help me out. But
I think you're right, like with blockchain, because then you're able to get verified instantly, anonymously as well. And that's how they kind of fact check and make sure like that what you have is verified, and it's verified across multiple, you know, multiple people. So yeah, that blockchain is kind of cool. You're kind of seeing that being introduced in medical records as well.
Yeah,
so think about medical records that you have in Australia and trying to bring it over to Vietnam, for instance. So they're trying to implement that. So yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, moving on to my second question for Dr. Ribeiro. I ask him what kind of experiences travelers will be looking for when they visit Vietnam. Once international travel resumes, what sort of experience do you expect travelers will be looking for in Vietnam?
Oh, wow. That's a phenomenal question. I think we have a possibility that things might go one or two ways. We may have people who have been inside their homes for so long, but at the same time, this is really unprecedented. The length and the impact of this pandemic is unlike any other crisis we've seen in tourism. So people value their safety and security above everything else. One possibility that may occur might be that people will travel not as tourists, which means that they spend the night, but as excursionists. They may go for the day, but then return to their homes, to their usual environment within a 24-hour period, perhaps an overabundance of caution. That's a possibility. Or they may go and visit their hometown, and that's also a form of tourism where they will feel safe. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that we'll see the opposite, that people have been without travel, which is this basic primal need for so long that, you know what, I'm not going to put off going to the Son Long Caves anymore. I'm not going to put off scuba diving in the Ho Chi Minh Islands. I'm not going to put off that trip that I've been dreaming and planning about for so years. Yes, I want to go on the cable car. I want to go scuba diving. I want to go hang gliding. And we might see slightly riskier behaviors. And the reason, Matt, why we don't know for sure is that the length of this pandemic is unlike anything else we've seen. And because it hits at the core of a basic human concern, which is your own health and safety, I mean, kind of all bets are off. At this point, we're engaging in a little bit of educated guessing.
That was Dr. Ribeiro on the kind of experiences travelers will be looking for when they visit Vietnam. There's a lot in there, Andy, about health and safety. On your list of priorities when you traveled pre-pandemic, where did health and safety rank compared to where you would rank it for post-pandemic travel?
And it was pretty low. Obviously, you'll go and get all the Hep C shots and any of the malaria shots or anything like that that you would normally get when you travel to Southeast Asia. But now it's quite high, and it's pretty high now because there's new variants popping out, like, you know, when Tupac releasing records posthumously. Remember this, back in the day, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, he seems to be popping out all these unreleased tracks every few months. It just feels like that's going to be the case.
What an interesting analogy.
I think the hierarchy of needs have changed as a traveler now that, you know, we're in this post-COVID pandemic era.
So you're going to see like an inverted pyramid of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, I've actually put as my top priority safety, you know, since before. So I don't think that's going to change, you know, like getting a rabies shot before I visited India, making sure that I had an additional travel insurance addendum in my contract because my existing one from work doesn't include the country that I'm going to. So I've always been, you know, in that kind of preparation mode. But I will also probably be part of that quote unquote bucket list traveler type.
Yeah, well, that's right.
Yeah,
I was about
that
to
Nuno
ask
was
you
talking about,
that question.
You know?
Yeah, because like, he flips it on its head, doesn't
I know.
He?
Yep. So like, look, I'm going to be 50 in another 3 years and I really, really want to go to, you know, this country and this country. By hook or by crook, I'm going to meet that travel dream of mine, you know, COVID or no COVID. You know, what if I die tomorrow and I didn't achieve that travel dream? And that's, I'm part of that bucket list traveler that he's talking about.
Okay, so you're a risk taker that he talks about, not the excursioner.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm still going to put my health and safety in priority.
Okay.
Take booster shots, put in, you know, an additional travel insurance addendum.
And how about you, Andy? Would you rate yourself as an excursioner or a risk taker?
Calculated risk taker.
yeah.
At the same time, similar to Mel, like YOLO, right? You only live once, so you've got to experience everything you can. But you try to, you know, minimize risk where you can. I mean, I think when you're younger, you just don't really care. But as you get older, you experience life. You see things differently and you're like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this, or if I'm going to do this, maybe I should protect myself by doing X, Y, Z. So that's how I kind of think. Very similar to Mel.
We're featuring the highlights of an interview I had with Dr. Nuno Ribeiro earlier this week. He's an academic and researcher on tourism and hospitality here in Ho Chi Minh City at RMIT Vietnam. Let's take a listen to our third highlight from Dr. Ribeiro's interview this week, in which I ask him what out-of-the-box strategies travel agents might use to entice travelers to Vietnam. What's something out of the box we can or might expect from travel agencies to get people to travel to Vietnam?
I think you will see something that's already started happening. You'll start to see direct routes from our primary market, which so far, as you know, are China, South Korea, some European countries, and the United States. We are very, very, very close to have direct flight routes to the United States, which would be remarkable. So on one hand, we will see an ease of transportation with fewer and fewer stopping points en route to Vietnam. That's one thing we will see. And then the second one, I think we will see at least for 2021, if there is travel in 2021, which I don't want to say no, but I think it's highly unlikely. But for the tail end of 2022 and 2023, I think you will see a reduction in price like we haven't seen before, especially from large organizations at the tourism and hospitality level. We are likely to see prices even at the luxury level be reduced even more. They were already reduced significantly last year, but I think now, because the overhead is so significant, they're likely to reduce them even more. And they'll do something else. They will add value. I think we are likely to see the return of group travel. We're likely to see the return of the package holiday. Because remember, one of the advantages of a package holiday is that everything is planned in advance for you. So one of the elements in that planning process are issues of safety and security. So we're likely to see a packaging of Vietnam as an attractive destination where all the itinerary is set on the outset with very, very attractive pricing strategies.
And do you think there'll be a particular traveler that will come from a particular region of the world?
That's a good question. If previous research is any indicator, we have started to notice that younger and younger travelers are coming to Vietnam. And I'm talking of people in their late teens and early 20s. And I'm not referring just to backpackers. I'm referring to middle class, well-established individuals that are either beginning their university career or they're at the tail end of their university career, but for whom Vietnam has a certain allure, has a certain mystery. And we're also seeing the rise of the individual traveler, but not the traveler as in the backpack that might go and explore Vietnam over the course of a month or so. We're seeing a slightly shorter stays that go anywhere between 1.5 weeks to 2.5 weeks, which is really, really interesting. I think the type of travel that we're attracting, in addition, of course, to business travelers, there's some visiting friends and relatives, primarily from Canada and the United States, some European countries. We're seeing young travelers, and these are coming primarily from South Korea, the United States, France, and Germany, which is really interesting because from those countries, we used to have a much older demographic in the past. And I think that post-COVID, we will see younger and younger travelers come to Vietnam in larger numbers.
Andy, a lot of stuff to digest there, but I think a key takeaway is that we might see more direct routes to Vietnam from certain regions at much cheaper prices than we're used to. So what do you make of that, given airfares have gone the other way in pricing with way fewer bums on seats and airlines juggling costs to remain operating? If people and governments are going to be more cautious, do you think packages with cheap airfares and accommodation will entice people to Vietnam?
Yeah, because like Nuno said, you're going to have a shorter period of time to travel. People want to maximize, similar to, I guess, the Chinese travel model, like people want to maximize their time when they travel overseas because they're going to spend like quite a long time in airports, probably getting all their negative tests and all that kind of stuff. So they want to be able to maximize the short amount of time they have when they travel, when they come here to Vietnam. I kind of feel that the government might have to step in and look to subsidize some of this stuff because if Nuno's saying that prices will go down even further, well, at some point, like how do companies actually make money? How do they operating, right? And so I think government will have to step in. And I think government will step in because like Mel said earlier in this podcast that, you know, Vietnam is built on a tourism industry, like a big, heavy tourism industry. So I see that coming through.
Okay. And Mel, the other interesting point Dr. Ribeiro predicts is that while group travel will be back, I'm not too sure among which demographic, so too will solo travellers, but not backpackers though. They'll be travellers who are young but have the means to travel to places like Vietnam for shorter stays of 2 weeks, as opposed to the customary backpacker way of going on the backpacker trail through Southeast Asia for weeks and months on end, like I did back in at the turn of the century.
Oh, there were airplanes back then?
There were. I actually flew on Air Laos.
Oh, wow. Yeah, dangerous.
That was pretty nerve-wracking. Okay. But it was fine. I survived.
Yeah.
So what's your take on this?
You know, when I was listening to Nuno, I was thinking, hey, who is the backpacker traveler before COVID? And why won't he return to Vietnam as opposed to, say, flashpackers or luxury travelers, you know, whether families or honeymooners, couples or families? So who was the backpacker that traveled through Vietnam before COVID? In the Vietnam experience specifically, there were backpackers who had another purpose for coming here. And that, I think, is, you know, worth mentioning. Most of the backpackers ended up staying longer, maxing out their tourist visa, converting it into a business visa so they can stay and work here. Perhaps they fell in love with a national and, you know, they got married and they're here. But that will be harder to do now, especially with the implementation of the new travel code, which took effect actually in July in 2020, and the new labor code, which has recently taken effect in January 2021. So the characteristic of the Vietnamese backpacker and their intentions of staying here and working is going to be harder. And so in that regard, I do agree with Nuno that we might see lesser backpackers.
Yeah, well, it makes sense because typically backpackers travel on a shoestring. So what have they been doing since COVID-19? Have they had jobs? Have they been able to save money to travel anyway? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Andy, do you have anything else on that?
No, I totally agree with what Mel kind of said and also what Ruben said. You know, the backpacker makeup or persona will definitely change as well. And also, you know, the packages, the free independent type of traveler market will also change as well because of like how laws have changed and therefore it'll dictate how behaviors will come about.
Okay. And now for our final highlight. Don't forget you can hear the full interview on our YouTube channel. Just search for the Bureau Asia, but the link will also be in the show notes. In this highlight, I asked Dr. Ribeiro to predict which destination in Vietnam will become a must visit for the first time ever. What destination in Vietnam do you think will become a must visit for the first time ever after COVID-19?
Oh man, you're putting me on the spot here, Matt. Okay, do you want an answer as a researcher or do you want a personal one?
I think go with a gut feeling.
Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City. I think that's it because it's a city that is so vibrant and that changes literally within the blink of an eye that I'm speaking for international travelers. For international travelers who have not been to Vietnam, I'm not sure if you've been keeping up with the news recently, but right now Ho Chi Minh City is very much deserted with the current lockdown measure, but it still irradiates this beauty, right? That's incredibly attractive for tourists and for us who are residents here. So I think that mystique will carry. And I think we will see certain dramatic changes in regard to tourism here in Ho Chi Minh City. In regard to tourists who may have been to Vietnam before, I think that the next major destination will probably be Hue City. It is, for some reason, that we researchers haven't been able to really explain very well. It's undervisited, except for domestic tourists, but I think that's more for historical and cultural purposes. But there is so much to see and do in Hue that I think that might be the next big thing. But again, speaking as a resident of Ho Chi Minh City, I think this will be it.
I love your answer. Dr. Nuno Ribeiro, thank you for your time.
Absolutely, Matt. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me anytime.
Okay, there you have it. Any surprises there?
Yeah, his suggestion was Hue out there. I think that people will still flock to Hoi An. I think between the two sisters, Hue and Hoi An, it's still going to be the smaller sister, the younger sister, who's going to trump up the big sister,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, you might be right there.
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice, though. I think Hue is a beautiful little town, and the river there is beautiful. It's got the history.
Can we do a show like that?
Oh, it'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be good?
I was surprised you said, like, that's Saigon. But the way he kind of... But I don't know, man, because I think Saigon is just like any other Asian city,
okay,
per se. And I would think that people, when they travel, they want to see something different, right? And that's where, like, you were describing Hoi An, like some of the more scenic type of places.
Yep.
I think that would be more attractive.
Well, that's all we've got for you today. It's time to push off. We've got to fly. I hope you've enjoyed our brief sojourn through the future of Vietnam tourism as much as we have. Now, as the captain on this deck, I really should salute my co-pilots. How many finger salute, Mel? Don't answer that. First Officer Melanie Kasul, thank you for being my wing woman again this episode.
And thank you, Matt Cowan, for being the wing beneath my wings.
Oh, God. You can patch Mel on social media. No radar needed. She's easy to find on Instagram at Melanie Kasul. And you can also check in on all the Bureau Asia channels to see what she's up to. And of course, out in what sounds like a control tower somewhere, landing some of the gags and crashing most of the others, Andrew Tran. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you so much.
You can catch Andy, if you can, on Instagram at Andrew Tran Digital. And I recommend you check out his website at andrewtran.asia to see how Andy manages extra baggage in the digital marketing space.
Full load, as they say.
And finally, you, our passengers, all first class, every single one of you. Thank you for buckling in for the long haul and not bailing out on us mid-flight or throwing a tanty. We appreciate it and hope you'll fly with us again soon. In the meantime, keep up to date with what's happening in Vietnam and Southeast Asia at thebureauasia.com. Join our growing Discord community and check us out on Facebook and Instagram. We're at Flight Lieutenant Kasul.
At the Bureau Asia.